Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this Wednesday, October 23rd. I am Doug Kazarian. Fun time of year, busy time of year, obviously, with all these sports going on. The NBA season is up and running. We're going to touch a little NBA with both John Murray, Mr. Executive Director at the Westgate, is going to be joining us in a little bit, but also with Aaron Renning, who you've heard on this podcast a couple weeks ago. We're going to do some college football with him. ER, also a big NBA junkie. So we're going to break this up, do a little college football, then do some NBA on the back end. I know it's been pretty heavy NBA, but we have time codes here on the summaries, so you can kind of bounce around if pick your poison, so to speak. But we do have some win total discussions before tonight's tip-offs. A lot are still on the board, so hopefully you can kind of beat the gun. But regardless, it's good information to have moving forward. Travis, how was your trip, my friend?
It was fun. It was quick. I'm a little tired right now, but it was worth it.
You want to share the share details with
me? I was at the Grand Ole Opry last night. Okay. Did an interview. We haven't said who the interview is with yet.
Okay.
People might be able to figure it out by some posts and stuff, but you know, Marty Smith and I were down there doing an interview, and then afterwards I hung out and sat on stage during the concerts. There's about 8 different acts. It was Opry Goes Pink, Breast Cancer Awareness. So they had a bunch of people singing.
Very cool. All right, man. Well, let's get to it. A lot of information to get your way.
That guy is kryptonite on a stick.
And we will have no bad plays. We bring in Aaron Renning. ER, how are you, my friend?
Well, we'll do our best anyway. Glad to be with you. Talk a little college football. Some NBA. I believe this is about my busiest week of the year. A lot of stuff going on. If you can't find any winners, Doug, you're not trying hard enough.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. I mean, it just feels like it's such a busy month to begin with. But right now, with the NBA starting, and it really is the busiest time of year. And actually, we're going to have a sports equinox on Sunday. I believe just the 18th time we have NBA, NHL, baseball, and NFL on the same day. So,
oh, good one.
Certainly a busy time of year for everyone. But you know the drill, ER. I'm going to talk out, flush out some picks. We enjoyed it a couple of weeks ago when you were on the pod last time, and I need some work. I have a really thin slate for me so far. I texted you some stuff that I'm thinking about, but I'm hemming and hawing, and it's a really tough week for me. So let's get going. You put in the work. I know you spent all night. You sleep weird hours, just like anybody who puts in a lot of work in their profession. So I'm eager to pick your brain and get you to share it with our loyal audience. So let's just start. Your first play on the board that has caught your eye.
We're going to go to Friday night college football and the USC Colorado. The USC favored by, well, it looks to be about 13.5. The total has clicked up a little bit to 63, and I like this total, Doug. This total opened about 61. As I mentioned, now it's 62.5, 63 out there right now. But both these teams are extremely banged up on the defensive side of the football. For USC, they were banged up going into that game against Arizona last week. They're actually starting. They were without their top two cornerbacks. We're starting some freshmen back there, and by the end of the game, they were out. They were without their best defensive player, their safety, and then they also thought they were without their second best defensive player. So it sounds like basically half their starting defense is going to be out for this game against Colorado. And you know, the Buffaloes are virtually the same thing. They've just had these defensive injuries all season long. So, you know, as the season triggers and it goes on and on, you just have this erosion, if you will. And, you know, a team like USC certainly has athletes and they can replace them to a certain degree. Colorado, it's a little bit more difficult. And, you know, when you have these cluster injuries, especially both teams at the cornerback position are just decimated. And then when you consider that USC has this air raid offense, it has these wide receivers that can go up and get the football. Colorado, the second worst passing defense in all of college football, Doug. So I would believe the Trojans are going to be able to score. plenty of points here. And I've always still liked, I mean, it seems like they've tried to ruin this Colorado offense a little bit, just scoring 3 and 10 points the last 2 weeks. But, you know, against Oregon's defense, that Washington State defense was trying to make amends. And both those games kind of died in the second half. I'm not sure this one exactly does. And, you know, with Montez at the quarterback for the Buffaloes here, you know, he's an NFL. He's probably going to be drafted here. And, you know, they've been slowed a little bit with Chenault, but I think he's gotten a little bit healthier each and every week. So I think this is a lot of points here on Friday night.
You know, it's funny. I really like USC, and I think they cover. But I think you've kind of tipped me over to the over because, look, Colorado's had back-to-back road games, and it was a very difficult spot going at Oregon. They had beat one in Eugene a couple years ago, I believe. So it was just a great spot for the Ducks, and you mentioned all the injuries for the Buffs. And then back-to-back road games with Wazoo just really needing a win, and it was a great spot for Washington State. So Colorado's not good, but they've looked worse than they actually are the last couple weeks. So I was reluctant to take the bait with the 13.5. I still think USC wins by like 17-20. It just won't be a blowout like we've seen the last 2 weeks because Colorado's back at home. I think the over is the right side because I think CU is going to get more points than the last couple weeks that you just alluded to being sort of a snail's pace down the fourth quarter. They're just trying to get out of town, just bleed clock, even on offense.
Correct. USC kind of had the same thing last week as well.
Right. Well, their offense actually put up some points in the second half. I believe they put up like 28, I want to say.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, their defense played well. They knocked, you know, Tate was essentially benched in the second half. But tell you what, that Arizona offense, that whole, you know, Khalil Tate with Arizona, something has just not smelled right with that team.
Correct.
Throughout much of the season and last season as well.
So, yeah, I think this feels like 40-21 kind of game.
Well, I hope it's more than that.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just good point. Let's say 40-24, but like the back door's open, and it's going to be like a Montez 4th and 7 around midfield that it comes down to.
And I mean USC wide receivers should run wild in this game.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, so here's a game that I want to talk about because it's really intriguing, and this is Michigan State, a team that we've talked about on this pod, I think even with you, just it's a team that is not as good as it is in years past. So it's a brand, and I just think they're incredibly inept on offense, but the spot really favors Sparty in this one, hosting Penn State laying 6.5.
It's a ridiculous spot. I mean, this is one of the best spots that you'll see in college football all season long. And if you look at Michigan State's kind of body of work so far this year, you know, they've had to some degree a disappointing season with the losses to Arizona State, Ohio State, and Wisconsin. Now, that Arizona State game was their third game of the season. They actually did outgain Arizona State by 200 yards, 1.3 yards per play. You know, field goal kicker couldn't make a kick. They turned the ball over. The offense actually moved the ball to a certain degree. You know, they went to Northwestern the next week. And, you know, against a very good Northwestern defense, they put up 31 points. The following week, they went to Indiana and put up 40 points again. And, you know, a lot of people do make of this offense that it just hasn't been any good. And it's certainly questionable, but it is a lot better than last year. They've actually played with a little bit more pace. They just haven't been efficient enough. And, you know, you look at the schedule, so they basically had 3 road games in 4 weeks. They went to Northwestern, came home against Indiana, then they went to Ohio State on October the 5th. They played that Saturday night game. Essentially, their third road game in 4 weeks, they went to Wisconsin, clearly were out of gas against what had been an excellent Badger team, and they got dominated. They got embarrassed. They got beat 38-0 by Wisconsin. Again, if you get beat bad by Ohio State, I can certainly forgive that. This season, how good Ohio State's been. And then, you know, they just ran out of gas. It was a no-show game against Wisconsin. So they had the bye week. And it's interesting, if you look at their schedule, they actually have a week off next week as well. So it's like a double bye week sandwiched with this Penn State game in. And Penn State has been, I guess you could say, their rivals. They're actually a double or a 13.5-point underdog to Michigan, or I'm sorry, to Penn State last year. They actually won outright. Michigan State 21-17 in that contest, and that was actually the game where Lewerke originally hurt his shoulder in that game. So that's circle, and Penn State. I mean, you know, they had the whiteout, all that stuff with Michigan last week. This Penn State team is excellent. Their defense is great. The offense is still a little bit iffy. This is not Ohio State. This is not a juggernaut type of team. And, you know, their body of work is good. You know, it just leaves a little bit to be desired. They're still not maybe dominating teams. You know, they go to that game against Iowa a couple weeks ago, the 3.5, 4-point favorite. They were actually outgained by Iowa 1.1 yards per play. Iowa had that really crucial turnover in that game. You know, Iowa's offense could not score, could not be efficient. And then last week, that was kind of their home run game against Michigan. Still didn't dominate that game. Were outgained by 124 yards. So, again, Penn State is very good, but I just don't trust them to win by over a touchdown in this incredibly hard spot against Michigan State. And believe me, you know, the Spartans are still a senior dominated team. They have a lot to prove. They could essentially win out this year, so I'll happily take the points here.
Can't fault you at all, the spot that we talked about, but I appreciate the breakdown. That was very elaborate, very compelling. I'm off Penn State because of I have too many sharp people I know is on Penn are on Penn State. So, excuse me, are on Sparty, so I'm off it. You have a game in the ACC, and I've played this conference a lot more than I usually do, but this Virginia team, and I like them a lot, especially defensively. Perkins is just sometimes a pain to watch him throw the ball, and obviously had the turnovers against Notre Dame. Louisville has already hit its win total, the over. They've been impressive, and it's an intriguing game here with the Cavaliers laying 3.5 at the Ville.
Yes, and I won't have anything to do with, as you mentioned, with the side in this game. This is a game where I like the total. Again, Virginia, Louisville, the total right now looks like it's Caesars 51.5. Well, that's about the lowest numbers out there right on the board. 51.5, 52 on this total. But Virginia, and I'll just go back the last couple of weeks. Remember the game against Notre Dame. And, you know, they got beat 35-20 in that contest. And remember, it was a very close game. Virginia actually had the lead in that game. And remember, there was a couple of essentially defensive touchdowns for Notre Dame. They had the 23-yard fumble recovery in that game, and Perkins just didn't make some plays offensively. They died in the second half. There wasn't a lot of yardage. It wasn't like both those teams went up and down the field. And then we watched them play Friday night against Miami a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of people liked Virginia in that spot, and Miami eventually gets the win, but that was a low-scoring game, if you will. There was not a lot of offense. 17-9, the final score, 26 total points in that game. Last week against Duke, and I had an underbet in this game as well, it was an extremely strange college football game, Doug. Virginia actually, they scored 48 points, but they had a ton of short fields. They had a kick return for a touchdown. Virginia had, I mean, this is not easy to do. They had 48 points. They had 307 total yards in college football. I mean, that is crazy. And Pittsburgh, for all they could, or I'm sorry, Duke in that game, 250 yards. You had 550 yards of total offense, yet you had 62 points scored. Generally, that's going to be about 35 points with that amount of offense. So I think we have some built-in value with that team under the total. And I think we do with Louisville as well. You know, they played essentially the three fastest offense you could possibly play in the ACC. They played Florida State, Boston College, and Wake Forest in three consecutive weeks. I think there was definitely some fluky offense for Louisville. Remember, Louisville's had all kind of problems sorting out this quarterback position. And, you know, the original starter is now out for the season. Last year they played Cunningham and Conley at the quarterback position. Certainly it was against Clemson's defense, but those two quarterbacks combined to go 8 of 22 for 107 yards. Sounds like New York Jets type of numbers for that offense last week. But it was not good, and I think this offense will tail off. And, you know, they have a new regime in Louisville. It is a little bit more of a ball control, you know, run the ball type of offense. So I thought there was pretty a lot of value playing this game under the total this week, Doug.
I like that a lot. And do you ever do, I mean, I know you have bet first halves and stuff, but just given the randomness of some of these scores and how sometimes second halves, I think, now this is just eye test, tell me, just the craziness of games sometimes happens in the second half with one team trailing by two scores and pressing more. If I like an under, I typically prefer the first half under.
I always say, and I've talked about this with you in the NBA before, Doug, and you're playing totals, I always encourage anyone to mix up your bets as much as possible to try to take some of that randomness away. Play it first half, play it second half, figure out if there's any trends involved in there. If you have access to the team totals, maybe you like one team or you don't like one team more than the other. Like, you know, we both agreed we thought USC was going to be able to score a lot of points on Friday night. Maybe you want to look at and try to find USC over the total on a team total, especially on a single event game like that on a Friday. You can find that that type of bet around.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually thinking that I'm going to have three plays. I got to enter at ESPN.com, and team total USC over is going to be one of them, and then side and game total over. But
there you go.
I just think, like, and it's funny you mentioned the NBA. We can talk about it. I actually think if I like an NBA over, I typically like first half overs because the pace, the looseness of the game, whereas fourth quarter we get more measured offensive possessions and more tighter defense, whereas you don't get the fouls. I mean, you obviously do occasionally have those weird when the difference between the game and the shot clock just lends itself to fouling and then going to, you know, trying to get the three ball and stuff. But typically that's more of a college basketball thing, the influx of points, and you'll see that in the second half total as well. I just like the, like Lakers-Clippers last night had an up-and-down pace first half, second half, just – that tends to be, if you can make a blanket statement, now every game's different, but that, but football is, tends to be different, whereas games open up a little bit more in the second half.
Yeah, no, it definitely can. And, like, you know, as we talk about, you try to find these trends and how these teams play. And you know, generally if you do like that, if you do like it over and it's a higher scoring total, I think, yeah, the first half over makes some sense. And actually, if you kind of like the under and it's a lower total, generally that first half under will be the way to look on some of that stuff.
Well, speaking of trends, I want to ask you about a game involving your home state, Wisconsin. Buckeyes are 7-0 ATS in the first half this year. It's kind of like Alabama last year. Any opinion on this game with the Badgers coming to the horseshoe?
I personally do not have an opinion. I mean, I just do not know what type of Wisconsin team's going to show up after that terrible loss against Illinois. The one thing I'll say about Wisconsin, I've watched just every single game of them. I think I've had action on every single game and follow that program very closely, is from a talent perspective, they have just executed, obviously with the exception of last week, they have just played to their 100% capability all season long, on defense, on offense, very well coordinated on both sides of the football. So I don't know, I don't think they have another level that they can get to. And what bothered me about Wisconsin was the quarterback play all season long. And, you know, Cohen had definitely gotten the job done, but you saw him throw that bad interception last week, which really cost his team the game. Ohio State is so good, so dynamic. I think Wisconsin could really, that defense, I don't know about struggle, but certainly could have some issues with the dynamic fields at the quarterback position. So, I wouldn't be surprised if Wisconsin just kind of had a no-show here and got beat by 28 points. But the same said, I could see them kind of rallying the troops and coming up with a peak effort and, you know, having a chance to beat Ohio State. I just have nowhere to go. I don't know. What do you see in here, Doug?
Well, I don't think they're going to have a chance to beat them. I really don't. I think Ohio State's talent is just too much. But keeping it within the numbers, a whole different ball game, right? That's the great equalizer. So the thing with the Buckeyes and is that they find themselves in third and long a lot. And they've gotten away with it because they're so good and Fields buy so much time in the pocket, whether scrambling or just extending the play and allowing his wide receivers to get open. Now, you can't expect a team to just get first downs on first two downs every drive. You're going to have some third and mediums to long, and they do. But I just wonder, I mean, who's the best team they've played all year?
I mean, that's they have not played that tough of a schedule.
Right, so we talk about it even with the Patriots, right? They're pounding everybody, but they're also they're not squeaking by wins. Remember the year that Florida State defended its national championship with the Jameis Winston year, like they were beating teams. They were like coming from behind down 21 and all these crazy games, and they were obviously not very good even though they were undefeated, and we learned that in the playoff when they lost to Oregon. But these teams are smoking and crushing teams. Ohio State's covered every game except for the opener. So,
right.
You know, you can...
And it was, ironically, FAU had minus 14 yards at halftime of that game and still covered.
I mean, you can criticize their schedule all they want, but they're handling their business as well. So.
Right. I mean, they're dominating their business. At Indiana, at Nebraska, at Northwestern, it's not that bad of a schedule.
Yeah, I mean, going to Indiana winning 51-10 is nice, right? Taking care of Sparty at home on a big atmosphere. Now, they should have played better. They should have scored more points, frankly. But I think I would lean Ohio State here, but nothing big for me.
Yeah, I'm not involved. I think it's a very tough game. And, you know, you mentioned the Buckeyes who have been dominating the first half so far. It's funny you say that, the third downs, because Wisconsin has been excellent, you know, with their third down defense. So I feel like Wisconsin has just played at that 100%, you know, percentile in a lot of these games. It's just going to be hard for them to hit another level, which they're going to have to need, they're obviously going to need to do here going to Ohio State.
A game you're on with Texas Tech and the over here, with Kansas. That's obviously Kansas and Texas flew over the total last week. So here this total is about 64.5 or 65.
Yeah, you know, it was a big play, or it was, you know, a play that – kind of caught fire at the end of last week with some news coming out with Kansas. And, you know, as the Jayhawks started the season, you know, it was the old Les Miles and 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And, you know, it was very evident when they get beat by Coastal Carolina 12-7 at home and score 7 points and the offense couldn't do anything in that game, that was not going to work with the personnel that they had. And, you know, it just in the talent basically at hand. And remember the following week, they went to Boston College on September the 13th and went up and down the field at about a three touchdown underdog against Boston College. And they essentially put in some RPO and ran a lot of run pass off action in that game. And, you know, after that, it was kind of strange because there was clearly a tug of war going on within this program from an offensive standpoint. Well, after the Oklahoma game, they had a bye upcoming, and they fired their offensive coordinator. They gave the job to this young guy, Dearman, who had, you know, coached at the, I think it was a Bevel College, Division II or whatever. But he had written a book on RPO. He's known for offense, you know, a young, energetic guy in his early 30s. And it was going to fit with what they wanted to do, and Les Miles basically called him a brilliant offensive mind, and I think he is very talented. And, you know, it was going to fit the talent here at Kansas. It was going to fit the players. They had ran a lot of this stuff in high school. And they had 2 weeks to prepare for Texas, and you saw what that offense was able to do last week against, you know, certainly a weak Texas defense, but Kansas put up 569 yards of offense. They played with a much better pace, etc., in that game. In fact, it was a crazy game. I actually had Kansas some money line. I got beat at the buzzer as Texas kicks a field goal there. But I actually had also played that game over the total. 1,200 yards of total offense, Kansas-Texas. So now Texas Tech comes to town. Kansas is going to be running this new type of offense. We know how crazy these Big 12 games can be. And Texas Tech, you know, obviously they lose Kingsbury, but they're still running a lot of pace here with what they're doing offensively. You saw that game. We saw some offensive output from this team. So expect a lot of pace, expect a lot of offense. This is a good old Big 12 shootout here on Saturday.
And would you get involved here at team totals?
You know, I'm not exactly sure how Kansas is going to react to that loss last week. Again, just so close to beating Texas. I'm a little worried about perhaps a letdown situation for that team. So I don't really have an inkling which way to play from a side perspective in this game. But I will say this, you know, the first half over the total is certainly worth a look.
Ooh, good. I like that, my friend. So it is tempting to fade Nebraska the rest of the way. So I'm looking at IU plus one, minus one, depending on your shop that you have. Talk me off it. Tell me I'm crazy to lay points with Indiana on the road.
Well, I mean, this is, I guess you could say it's not a bad spot for Nebraska. I mean, they were embarrassed their last game against Minnesota. It was just a complete no-show for them. And you get a couple weeks to prepare. I mean, this is kind of has to be their game. But, you know, I will say this, Doug. I'm not sure if what Nebraska's A game is at this point. And I'm not sure. I think there is a sign that this team is probably pointed towards next year, and they will start playing a lot of these young players. I don't know what the quarterback position is right now. Adrian Martinez is questionable, I think questionable at best. It would be very hard for me to play this game without knowing his status because he is such a dynamic quarterback here. So I'm not betting. I played Nebraska in that game against Northwestern, and that was about the last of me playing Nebraska for the season. I was pretty much done with them at that point.
And I actually tweeted as much. I said, that's it. I'm done with Nebraska the rest of the year. And the next week, I took Minnesota, and I'm done. So I think you're right. I think it's sort of the rally the troops game for the Huskers. But I will say this. I haven't seen them play four full quarters of consistently. Like they are a 2.5-quarter team, and we saw that against Northwestern. Northwestern stinks, by the way. So I just to your point is I don't even know what their best game is, and IU is like decent and has a powerful offense, but we're not talking Ohio State and Oklahoma here, but like they can score. So even if Nebraska orchestrates a few drives, I still think Hoosiers have too much offense for them.
I'm a big fan of this Indiana program. Allen has done a tremendous job. He turned over the defensive coordinator this year so he could kind of be more of a head coach. And, you know, you look at their resume, they got beat by Ohio State and Michigan State, which is not certainly uncommon for Indiana. But, yeah, this team is definitely for real. This is one of the better teams they've had. They've recruited better as well. So, yeah, very good Hoosiers team.
Yeah, and those are the two teams you mentioned are their only two losses. And outside of those games, they're hanging at least 34 in all these games. So I'm looking at a team total over for Nebraska. Not that Nebraska's defense has been completely atrocious. It's more their offense, but I think they can get torched here by IU.
All right.
So that's where I'm leaning there. And I look at Iowa, too. I mean, Northwestern's bad, man. So I want to lay the points with the Hawkeyes, but they have some key guys out. And they're kind of a pedestrian offense, all things considered.
Yeah, I think Iowa's offense can definitely be better than they've showed. I mean, they've played some really good defensive teams. They've gotten a little bit healthier on that offensive line. I mean, you know, they have an NFL-caliber quarterback. You have two first-round draft picks at the tackle position for that team. That offense should be, it should be better than it's shown.
But do they get right against Northwestern? Like, that's the question. And then
right. I mean, it's a trick because Northwestern, I mean, there's certainly not another team in college football that is less offense and more defense than the Northwestern Wildcats. It is ugly to watch their football game.
But they had, like, even against Ohio State, there was a drive where the penalty, like a holding call, brought the offense back. They had crossed midfield. They can get some points here. It's
definitely not Rutgers. Rutgers might be better offensively. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, Rutgers is pretty good. So these are all the games I've sort of not a lot. Where do you stand on this Arkansas game with Alabama? It's extremely intriguing. I'm so curious to see how Nick Saban approaches it, just given that he might need to use Mac Jones against LSU, and he's got a bye week the following week, and Arkansas is just not very good. So I'm very curious what I'm being told, people who kind of know things, is that it's not going to be a simplified basic offense like power eye left and right. I think he's going to try to develop some synergy, he being Saban, trying to get some synergy developed with this quarterback Jones and the receivers. Maybe not the slants we're used to seeing Tua carve up teams with, but that we will see some passing.
Yeah, I mean, as we know, Doug, you could get your eligibility, and you could probably throw some touchdown passes with this, with the talent for Alabama has on offense here. You know, and that was my initial look. I thought, you know, I was going to maybe play that game under the total because you could, you know, you could see Saban playing very conservative, which he has in some games. You go back to that, the first game against Duke and some earlier games this year where they didn't. You know, maybe have that, and they still were scoring a ton of points. But boy, this total for Alabama standards, the odds makers adjusted it really well. 55.5, 56 for this total. And Arkansas, to me, has been a little bit more of an over team, if you will. They've kind of played musical chairs at the quarterback position. But defensively, you know, we saw last week where they were, you know, beat up really bad. By Auburn. They've tried to play with a little bit more pace. So I just did not have anywhere to go in that game. Like I said, the value or the thought or the matchup wasn't quite there with maybe trying to play Alabama under the total.
No, I know. That's where I wanted to go. And I was actually on the second half last week because I think that was the game that Saban wanted to just bleed clock and get out of there. But I think mm-hmm. this is a different situation. I think he's going to be preparing his quarterback for potentially having to face LSU, and that's the rub here.
You know, I think maybe it's a game that perhaps sets up for a second half under.
Yeah.
If Alabama has that big, you know, 31-3 lead at halftime, maybe you look to play the second half under.
Interesting. Okay, my man. I think that's all we got for college. Kind of a light discussion here. It doesn't sound like we have a bunch of plays here.
I got, you know, I feel good about the three or four. I got the three totals in the side, so I'm feeling good about my college football. Better than last time I did the podcast.
Good. Well, here's one game I actually did. I was eyeing at least. I wanted to talk it out. Cal and Utah over unders 37.5, very low. And I don't want to be skewed too much by last week's Utah game because that was in the pouring rain, so it was very sloppy conditions. This feels really low. But I still want to take the under, just because Cal's that inept offensively.
I will definitely not argue with any type of that. I'm hoping Cal and Northwestern play in a bowl game, so we get a total of about 27.5, Doug. But I don't think Cal or Northwestern. Cal might, but Northwestern doesn't have much of a chance to qualify for a bowl game. But you're right. I mean, with Cal's showing offensively last week. When you get Oregon State at home, we know Oregon State has been atrocious from a defensive standpoint. They play with some pace. I don't know where Cal is going to go at the quarterback position. Monster has been a disaster, and it hasn't been easy for them anyway with what they do offensively. So matched up against that Utah defense, it is, I don't know what the team total is, but it can't be very high for Cal, and deservedly so, because with the injury at the quarterback position, it is just almost impossible for this Cal team to score right now.
Yeah, you're looking at like 9. That's probably what it's going to be. 9 and 30. Like 8 and 29. Like are the two team totals, 29-8. So
yeah. Right. That is incredibly low for a college football game. But as we've seen, Cal has had these low totals, and it hasn't mattered just because they are so bad. It really depends. You know, I'm not sure what the status is here for Huntley with the Utah quarterback here. And, it kind of comes down to, you know, we just talked about with Alabama. Does Utah want to play conservative here and have a low-scoring second half? But, yeah, Cal's still very good with what they want to do defensively. This is not a game I'm going to be involved with. And, you know, crazy things can happen when you have such a low total like this. But Cal is certainly not that dynamic team where you expect that to happen.
All right, good stuff. So here's what's going to happen on the podcast for all those listeners. We're going to take a break, and John Murray is going to join us to have some perspective from behind the counter with college football, and then ER is going to return for some NBA talk.
Kicking is for losers.
It sure is, and every football weekend we see more examples of it. Mr. Executive Director John Murray joining us. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Your Nats have a 1-0 series lead. How do you feel?
I feel really good. I mean, tonight we can really apply the pressure with Strasburg going in game 2 here on the road. If they could win this game, I'd be feeling pretty good going back to D.C. on Friday, I'll tell you that much.
And you'd be, and you would act, that's in the literal sense, because you're going back to D.C. this week.
Yeah, I fly back tomorrow. I'll be at Game 3 Friday night. It's pretty exciting, man. It, you know, we said before the series we were just hoping to split the games in Houston and get back home 1-1 for Game 3, but now that we won Game 1, we might as well win Game 2 as well.
At least go for it. I texted you last night. Like, I forgot how stressful this stuff was. Last year, Games 2 and 4 took years off my life.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, frankly, Game 3 did too, but they won.
Yeah, it's so crazy, like, just being in the World Series, period, when you're a franchise like the Washington Nationals. They've come so far since their first season. Just to see them in the World Series at all is crazy. It was pretty fun. Getting 5 runs off Gerrit Cole, I thought, was a huge accomplishment by the team.
Yeah, I think everyone does.
Our outfielders need to, other than Soto, they need to keep they made some mistakes in the outfield. Let's just say that. I don't know what they were doing out there, but it's okay. We got the W.
Yes, you did. Okay, well, we need some W's in college football here. What do you got that's caught your eye behind the counter?
Well, one thing that definitely caught my eye was how much money has come in on Kansas. I don't know if you've been paying any attention to that game, and I wouldn't blame you if you weren't, but Kansas has been like a really sharp side. That number actually opened 8 at Circa over the weekend and opened much higher. And we had sharp guys taking Kansas plus 3.5 this week. We're at 3.5 right now, but that's one that you've seen really come down on. And then one of the games everybody is obviously focused on this week is the Ohio State-Wisconsin game. We had a sharp guy laid 14 in that game. We're at 14.5 right now. We think Ohio State's the highest power-rated team in the country at the moment, and it's not just because Tua's hurt. Even if Tua was healthy, I think Ohio State's a little bit better than Alabama right now.
It's hard to argue with that, and I saw a stat, and I've just tweeted it, and I am ashamed. I am ashamed. John,
you're so hard on yourself.
I'm even going first name here because what was one of my identities last year? My calling card last year in college football betting.
Your calling card?
It was Alabama first half, right?
Oh yeah. You're putting me on the spot. You're right. I should have got that. Okay, I'm sorry.
I mean, so this year I said I have a feeling Clemson's the new Bama this year. Oh yeah. Oh no! It's the Buckeyes.
Yeah, oh my God.
You know what they are first half, ATS?
Whatever, however many games they are, they got to be that and zero.
Yes, they are. Right? 9-0. 9-0.
Yeah.
And I had them last week.
No, they haven't played 9 games yet. Have they? Come on. That can't be right.
Oh, I think it's dating back to last year. Damn it. You're right. Hold on. Yeah, you're right. They couldn't have. They're 7-0. You're right.
The way they're killing people, it feels like 9. Let's say that. No, right. I keep making this joke, but it's true. Every time we put Ohio State on the big screen with audio here in the Superbook, we have to take it off in like the second quarter because they're up 42-0 already. I mean, I know they've played a weak schedule, but they are absolutely killing everybody they play. You can't just ignore it and act like it's not impressive. Wisconsin clearly got caught looking ahead to this game last week. That doesn't excuse what happened. Losing that game is embarrassing. But clearly they got caught looking ahead. And I don't know how you could really bet against Ohio State right now. Do you really want to step in front of that train right now?
No. You don't want to overreact to the game where Wisconsin was looking ahead. I mean, I apologize to all the Illinois fans out there, but that was at least a component of it.
I think it was a factor, yeah. I mean, you can't just totally skip over that. I don't really get too invested in the whole looking ahead or let down spot thing, but clearly when Wisconsin comes out that flat and loses to Illinois when they're playing at Ohio State the next week, you have to think that's at least a factor in the result of that game.
So what was it, 30.5 point underdog, 20-1 on the money line?
Yeah, we didn't have a money line here, which is fortunate because I'm sure everybody would have just been taking flyers on the dog. But yeah, the money line obviously was super high.
It's funny. I mentioned it on the pods. I don't feel terrible kicking myself wise, but I was very close to taking the Georgia Tech on the plus the points in the column, my picks column. But let's just say I had a flyer on the dog on the money line there. So two big upsets last week in that regard. But yeah, Ohio State's 14.5, and I was just saying I don't want to overreact too much, but I think the Buckeyes get there. I mean, they've been amazing in the second quarter of this season, but I just think they're so powerful. And it's not going to be a 50-point win, but like if they win by 20, like I wouldn't be stunned here. I mean, they're going to cover. I think they're going to cover the two touchdowns here.
What do you think of this one? Another, we'll stay in the Big Ten. We had a sharp guy laid 6.5 points with Penn State. They're on the road at Michigan State.
I'm torn on this game because, so my picks are due this afternoon, and I did the write-up of a few.
You got to pick Wednesday or Saturday's games on a Wednesday?
Oh. They're due by 3 p.m., and then they come out tomorrow morning. Tell me about it.
Who do you think you are, Brandon Lang?
Let's just say I've missed a few deadlines. So 3 o'clock, sometimes they get submitted around 8 p.m. Because I also have the Daily Wager show, too. It's not exactly convenient timing, let's put it that way. No, so I'm sitting here poring over stuff. You know, I obviously watch all the games, and now, a couple of the other guys, Preston, Bill Connolly, and even Phil Steele, they have models and they have projections and power ratings. Like, I don't. I'm all eye test and then other stuff. So it takes a lot of time. And, you know, I change, you know, so like I said, I had some picks in the column I just didn't submit. I do a lot of write-ups Tuesday night and half the stuff doesn't make the cut. But I like Penn State. But too many people I really respect are on Sparty. So I'm really torn here. Because I think Sparty and Northwestern stink this year compared to where they've set the bar in previous years. Everyone's like, oh, Fitzgerald is a dog. And, you know, D'Antoni, like these teams, like this Michigan State team stinks compared to previous years. So
yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I like Penn State to go in there and cover the 7. I mean, look, it's not the best spot. We can accept, you know, we can establish that. And I like how D'Antoni went for the fake punt against Wisconsin. He's fired up. He's trying to think outside the box here. And it's a good spot for Sparty, but I just don't think they have the horses on offense.
I was a little shocked that Michigan rallied on Saturday night. You know, they were down 21-0. That atmosphere, I think Michigan, everybody is criticizing Michigan, criticizing Harbaugh, and I understand why in a bigger picture sense. He's been a disappointment in Ann Arbor, obviously. But I thought that was very impressive that they were able to rally back from where they were in that game to get to a point where that kid dropped a touchdown pass that theoretically would have tied the game with a made extra point. Well, that was very impressive to me.
I completely agree. I was actually texting the Bear a little bit during the game. He was sensing a blowout. He goes, this thing might be over at 14-0. I'm like, it might be. It certainly feels that way, but things calm down a little bit sometimes in those situations.
I thought it was, I'll tell you right now, I agreed with the Bear. When it was 14-0, I thought, and then it was 21-0, I thought the final score was going to be like 45-7 or something.
Oh, I did too. I did too, yeah, for sure.
Michigan really outplayed them in the second half very badly, and Penn State was fortunate to escape that game with a win.
Well, let me ask you this. Don't the metrics just love Penn State? I mean, FPI had them winning their division as of like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago.
The computer power ratings that we look at, all of them love Penn State. I mean, that's why everybody was asking me last week before that game, why was that line so high? And it was because just all these power ratings love Penn State this year. They've got them power rated through the roof. I don't necessarily agree with that personally, but I can't argue with those numbers. Those numbers are overall very good.
We'll see. I think we're going to learn. This is a good spot. So anyway, I might be off this game. I'm hemming and hawing, clearly. What else you got? So you got Kansas, OSU.
I'll give you another sharp play in a high-profile game because everybody loves those. Nobody wants sharp plays in the Tulane Navy game.
Wow, we love them all. We love them all.
No, we've seen this number drop. Auburn was getting 12.5. We saw guys take 12.5. They took 11. We're down to 10.5 right now. Auburn is at LSU. It's the big afternoon kickoff in the SEC. It's definitely some sharp money on the Auburn Tigers at the LSU Tigers. It's another team, though. Do you really want to step in front of LSU? I mean, we just talked about stepping in front of Ohio State. I don't really want to step in front of LSU right now either.
Well, Auburn's covered every game but the Florida game. So just it's not like they're a mediocre. They've been a beast.
No, they're good.
And Auburn
is great defensively. Great defensively.
LSU has yet to lose a cover or yet to fail to cover against an FBS school. So these teams are combined 2 losses this year, ATS. That's pretty impressive.
They've both been very impressive, and Alabama still has to play both of these teams down the stretch. Let's keep that in mind. You look at now, you got Tua Tagovailoa potentially injured for several weeks, I guess. It's possible, right? I mean, even when he comes back, you can't think he's going to be 100%. And Alabama's still going to have to get through both of those teams and play theoretically in the SEC championship game. So there's a lot coming down the line here for Crimson Tide.
Well, this is why I liked Clemson all along in the futures market, because they didn't have a path like that. I think Alabama's going to lose at Auburn.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. And yeah, and Clemson, I've seen people criticizing Clemson a little bit and saying, oh, maybe they won't get into the college football playoff because their schedule's so easy. If Clemson goes undefeated, they are going to get one of those four spots. Let's be honest now. Come on.
Of course they are.
There's no way. Of course they will. And Clemson is going to go undefeated. Clemson, I know their offense hasn't been as impressive this year, and people are saying maybe Lawrence has taken a step back a little bit. I can't really disagree with that. But Clemson defensively looks as good as they ever have to me. Their defense is so fast. They look great.
If they had lost that North Carolina game, you could have made – I mean – it would have been an interesting discussion. If Ohio State runs the table, if Oklahoma runs the table, SEC champ, that's maybe not Georgia, right? Because they already have that loss. And you can, and then if Oregon runs the table, that's going to be interesting too, outside of the opening loss to Auburn. So I'm pulling for Oregon to get a shot here.
I don't think the Pac-12 is going to get in. I mean, I felt like even if the Pac-12 went undefeated, they wouldn't get in. I don't see a one-loss Pac-12 team getting into the top four.
If Oklahoma loses in the Big 12 title game, and it would be Clemson, let's just say the Buckeyes go undefeated, you can go Buckeyes, Clemson, SEC champ, and Oregon.
Yeah, Buckeyes, Clemson.
Because losing to Texas on a neutral would be worse than week one losing to Auburn on a neutral.
Yeah, that's true, because it's the last game of the year.
And Oklahoma's wins aren't, like, that amazing.
No, not really. But I feel like the Pac-12 doesn't really get consideration, and I can see why right now. That conference is just so down. Oh, I'm talking overall. I know Oregon is a very talented team.
I agree, but if there's a team that they can leapfrog with a loss here and there, it's the Big 12, because they also get dismissed.
True, they do. Although I think Oklahoma's gotten in the last 2 years, though.
Right, because they've been undefeated. But
No.
But I'm sorry, you're right. They lost last year. You're right.
I think they had a loss the year before as well. The year that they played Georgia in the Rose Bowl.
With Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, that Baker Mayfield team. I think they did lose to somebody in the regular season. I'd have to look that up.
At home to Iowa State, maybe?
Yeah, maybe Iowa State. I know that they've been tripped up by Iowa State in the past, but... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Obviously, it's possible you could be right, but when I look at the playoff picture, I don't even consider the Pac-12 right now.
Well, you're right, because Oklahoma hasn't had an undefeated season since 2000.
It looks like they did lose to. No, they beat Iowa State that year. Who did they lose to?
They lost at home to Iowa State one of these years.
Maybe it was 17. Maybe it was. They. But that team, that was the team that really should have won, I thought, in the playoff game. But Lincoln Riley kept kicking field goals in overtime. I thought that was crazy. Yeah, they lost in Norman to Iowa State, 38-31.
Right. When we talk about the biggest upsets, including this Illinois upset, that's, I think, on the radar. I think they were 32-point favorites there.
Yeah. They've managed to get in with one loss. The difference would be, of course, that game was on October 7 of 2017. The Texas game last year, I'm sure, was in the middle of October. And in this scenario that you're presenting, they would lose the Big 12 championship game in December. And I know that maybe it shouldn't matter when the teams lose, but I think clearly it does.
Well, and it reminds me of something we've talked about throughout this brief history of the college football playoff, is sometimes playing a really good opponent can help you. Sometimes it can hurt you. We're talking out of conference. So the 2017... when they beat Iowa State, they also had the win at the Horseshoe. And that was the feather in their cap that kind of got them into the playoff with a one loss. Now, the year before, they lost at home to Ohio State, and I believe that was their only loss. So that hurt them, scheduling a team like that hurt them. They also had Houston that year. That's right. They also lost to Houston. But that's the whole point. You schedule these games, and there's the intention of helping you, and sometimes they do, like 2017. But sometimes they hurt you, and that's always interesting in this dynamic of the playoff, because we haven't seen a two-loss team reach the college football playoff yet. So anyway, we're getting a little sidetracked here.
We are, but I like talking about the college football playoff. But it factors into futures too.
When you're trying to bet futures, I mean, I know Ohio State the year that Cardale Jones was the quarterback and they won because
I had that future. I was on that.
What were the odds? Yeah. Like 30 or 40, right?
I think I got like 45-1 or something. It was something crazy.
We were so conditioned that one loss in the BCS era means you're out.
Yeah.
And that was a September loss at home to Virginia Tech. And we were so conditioned, and that's why you as odds makers kind of boosted all these crazy odds, because we were so conditioned to two teams being undefeated or a one loss. Like in the old era of the BCS, that team would have never had a chance. But because it's A, four teams, and B, you have a committee that can sort of assess how you're playing at the end of the season. So odds makers learned a lot that year. And the next year when there were other teams that lost early, nobody's odds went skyrocketing. It's like, hey, let's pump the brakes. Let's not get burned like we did the previous year.
You know that my first year living here, 07, I bet LSU to win the championship at 8-1 before the season started. What a stupid bet that was. And you know, they won the national championship even though they lost two games in the regular season.
That is really funny.
But what a bonehead bet that won. It's a great memory. Let's go, we got to talk about the Notre Dame-Michigan game. Because that's a game where Michigan opened a small favorite offshore and in a couple places in town. And right now that line's down to pick 'em. So a lot of steam in the offshore markets, especially on the Fighting Irish. I don't know how good Notre Dame is, to tell you the truth. Michigan, again, I was very impressed with Michigan on Saturday. To battle back like that, I know they got hit in the mouth and looked like they were going to get run off the field, and they really battled back well. So I think the Notre Dame-Michigan game is a very, very interesting game this weekend.
Well, the spot completely favors Notre Dame.
Yes, they're off their bye week.
Off a bye, and then Michigan, big game. Although, I'm learning, maybe in the NFL too, maybe these teams are better to bet on going into the bye than coming out of. Like the Bears, I think, have lost six straight years coming out of the bye. Just, I don't know. Like, they're not in a rhythm. They're not.
Yeah. Well, it's up to the coaching staff.
Yeah.
It's really up to the coaching staff, and I'm sure we'll talk about it on the NFL show, but I don't think Matt Nagy is doing a very good job with the Bears. I think everyone is so quick to point the finger at Trubisky, and they're kind of letting Nagy off the hook completely, and I think that's wrong. But, yeah, I think it's up to the coach. The coaching staff, I should say. They're the ones that get these guys prepared and motivated off the bye week.
Well, yeah, and Andy Reid's historically great off the bye. I'm just saying sometimes these teams are, like, in a cycle, in a rhythm, and these teams off a bye, it's not like they're hitting hard in practice. So to go from 0 to 60 and – I don't know. I'm just talking it out. But you're right. It's all case by case. I'm trying to find a convenient narrative. It's just not there. But so Notre Dame coming off a bye, just the Michigan spot. But I think you're on to something, because we might need to reevaluate what we think of Notre Dame, given that we've been so impressed with their performance at Georgia and then the USC game. But like, USC is obviously not that good. And then the Georgia game may not be as amazing as we once thought.
No, not really. But I don't know how good Notre Dame really is. But I know Michigan, talk about a team that needs a win, Michigan. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, that number opened a little bit higher, and we've seen it get bet down.
So you're saying so Notre Dame was
The sharp money's on Notre Dame. Michigan was -4, -3, -2.5, and now the game's pick 'em. So the sharp money in the offshore market has come in on the Irish.
Copy. I didn't understand what you were saying at first. Okay. I think Notre Dame wins, but I wouldn't be shocked. It's a pass for me. I can't get involved in that game. We've seen too many variations of each team.
Yeah. It's hard to bet on Michigan right now because you just don't know what you're going to get.
Right.
I'll give you two more just quick hitters. I don't have a whole lot to say about them, but we saw sharp money on Appalachian State. They laid 25. That number's up to 27. They're at South Alabama. That game's early Saturday morning. Also, another early kickoff, Oklahoma. They laid 23.5 at Kansas State on a road game there. So another big Oklahoma, once again, a huge favorite. And just looking at that time slot, that'll be a game. Like, obviously, everybody is going to be focused on the Ohio State-Wisconsin game, and I'm sure we'll need Wisconsin huge, but the other early kickoff we're really going to need is Kansas State. I think a lot of the parlays on Saturday are going to start with Oklahoma.
Can't fault them for laying that. Interesting. No. Okay, sir, let's talk about some hoops in a sec.
Sure.
That guy is kryptonite on a stick.
We don't want you to be kryptonite on a stick. It's very important. Obviously just two games opening night, but I mean, we already had a criminal bad beat with the Pelicans plus 7.
Yeah, I heard about that one. I saw the Twitter meltdown there. So they were down, because I'm watching the baseball, obviously. Right. So they were getting 7 points, and the other team covered in overtime. The Raptors covered in overtime.
Correct, and closed on an 8-0 run. 8-0 run.
Oh, close regulation on an 8-0 run?
No,
or close overtime.
And it was, you know, Pelicans were leading at halftime, and it was the right side all game, obviously.
I mean, welcome to the NBA.
I had second half Raptors, and they were down like 3 with like 2 minutes to go, and out of a timeout, Van Vliet hit a 3.
Oh,
so they were lucky to win the game. I mean, not lucky, yeah, but fortunate to win the game.
Yeah.
So let's talk big picture, sharp action stuff that's resonated. I just want to gloss over some NBA right now.
I mean, we definitely saw some sharp money come in on the Lakers under wins, under 51.5. That would be a sharper win total play. Another one is the over. For the Memphis Grizzlies, seen a number of guys that we respect betting on the Grizzlies to either make the playoffs, betting them over wins. And then we did have one sharp bet I wanted to touch on that we took yesterday. This guy bet $10,000 on the Rockets to win the Western Conference at 11-2. And he's a guy we really respect a lot. So that I thought that was interesting, because I just don't see the Rockets as a team that's built for the playoffs. I mean, I think they'll put together a really good regular season win number. But I don't know about them in terms of winning 3 playoff series in the spring.
I actually think the Rockets are, you know, it's funny. This generational team in the Warriors has changed how we perceive certain teams and players. You and I have talked about this with the Cavaliers team, especially with LeBron, yep, Kyrie, and Love. Like that,
well, that
team
2017 Cavaliers team, that team would have won an NBA championship almost every year that I've been following the NBA.
Right, and that's my point about
that
the Rockets.
So good.
They've had the Warriors on the ropes a couple times. Now, are they as good? So my point is, I think the Rockets are going to win a lot of games. I think they're definitely a contender. So I'm not dismissing them just because they haven't the last couple of years. I just think it's interesting that they took such a sharp bet. But I get it. I agree with that. I also disagree with the Grizzlies. You're telling me you took action on them to make the playoffs?
Yeah, and we were kind of surprised by it, because if you look at the Western Conference, it's hard to imagine that they could slip into the top 8. Now, I should tell you, these guys took 15-1 on the Grizzlies to make the playoffs.
Right.
So they're probably not expecting to win that bet, right? But certainly, it's hard to picture them going far in the West. The West is so deep, and there's probably 11 or 12 teams ahead of them in the West that all expect to make the playoffs this season. It's very hard for me to picture them getting into the postseason. It's a group that we respect, and they that's a bet they made.
See, I'm on the under there. That's funny. I'm on the under for them.
Well, the same group, they made a bunch of bets on the Diamondbacks before the season, and we didn't like those either. And the Diamondbacks actually had a really good year in baseball. Obviously a different sport, but the Diamondbacks almost managed to sneak into the playoffs themselves.
They were right there. Traded Greinke, too. Yeah. Like they were right there.
Yeah, oh, I know. I know. So you're just passing along,
right?
A group that we think is smart, and that's a bet. That's bets we've seen them making. And then that guy that bet the Rockets to win the West. He's also a guy that we really respect a lot.
Gotcha. Well, it's going to be fascinating. Obviously, we've talked about how wide open it this year is. So I just wanted to get a couple quick nuggets to pass along to our viewers, Mr. Director. We appreciate your input on everything, and we're going to talk to you in the NFL pod.
Can't wait.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
On that note, we bring back Aaron Renning. Obviously you are an NBA guru as well as all sports. And look, we're up against the clock for season win totals, and we're going to pick your brain about some games tonight, but really just like kind of macro topics. But first things first, any season win totals, not including the teams that played last night, so the 26 teams that are left that you – are still high on at current numbers?
Yes. You know, one that I think is going to be really the most improved team in the NBA, and that would be the Chicago Bulls. And I like their team total over. I think it's 33.5, maybe 34 out there. You might have to lay a little extra juice. It's been a popular play. But, you know, last year, what did the Bulls win? About 24 games, Doug. And, you know, they were, I mean, they were incredibly injured with what they tried to do. Last year, they won 22 games. And it was just kind of a weird situation with the Fred Hoiberg gets fired. They bring in Boylan. Boylan, you know, has them slow down and then eventually has them play at a little bit better pace, which he's talked about this year. The Bulls are going to shoot more three-pointers, kind of the modern-day NBA, if you will. But all these guys were just extremely banged up. Markkanen last year played 52 games. Their number one draft pick, Wendell Carter, played 44 games. Otto Porter, they brought him over in a trade from Washington. He played 15 games. Of course, their hopeful all-star, Zach LaVine, played 63 games. So they're going to get, you know, hopefully a healthier team with all those guys. And then they really didn't lose much of anything. Certainly, a guy like Jabari Parker, they lost him, obviously, last year. You know, Lopez, they lose in the offseason. But they bring in a guy like Thad Young, which I think helps a young team from a maturity standpoint. I think you can say the same thing for a Satorowski for the Washington backup point guard that actually had to play a lot more starting point guard. So there's just so many different things, and the personnel is going to be totally different. And, you know, are the Chicago Bulls a above-average basketball team? Not quite sure about that. But in the watered-down Eastern Conference, and when you're asking this team just to get to 34, 35 type of wins, I think this can be a fringe playoff team in the Eastern Conference. I think you're going to see all these guys, a lot of these guys, take a leap. And then you have a guy like Otto Porter, who is a very undervalued asset here in the NBA. But the Bulls, to me, are probably the most improved team in the NBA.
It's funny. Everything you just said is what I wrote for ESPN.com's chalk section that's out right now. And I agree. And I think the key is when you handicap these season win totals for a lot of these bad teams is you have to kind of project tanking. And they're going to pick up some wins on some tanking teams. Like, there might be a Pacers team that ends up tanking. Or one of these teams that we think are good, the Pistons. Good meaning, like, not tanking. That end up tanking because they had injuries go against them. And I don't see the Bulls tanking at all. Unless we see Armageddon like we did last year when, like, everyone was hurt and it was a lost season. I think just the way Jim Boylan is and this team is constructed, that they have their core, the guys you mentioned, Wendell Carter, Markkanen, LaVine, Porter, I think they're all in on this season. And I think they are going for that 8 seed. And, again, they won 22 last year. We're asking them to win more than 50% more this year, but I think all the pieces line up that we could see that in a watered down East that you mentioned. So I like that play a lot for all the reasons you discussed and what I just said. So any other? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to stay in the Eastern Conference and talk about another team, the Miami Heat last year, 39-43. Another team that was beat up and banged up much of last year. This total for the Miami Heat, 43, 43 and a half, 44s out there. But, you know, I think the big thing, and, you know, I respect this organization, obviously, what Pat Riley is going to be able to do. They generally get the most out of their talent. And they have better talent this year. And, you know, when you get a superstar, it makes all the difference in the world in the NBA. And I view Jimmy Butler as that superstar. And he's underrated to a certain degree because he is so good defensively. So they bring in Jimmy Butler, and he's able to create his own offense, and we know he's very much a lockdown defender when he wants to be. And this is his team. He's never really had his own team, if you will. He chose, obviously, to come here. So, and I think he fits with kind of the hardworking lunch pail type of team that Miami can be. So that really helps this organization move forward. And, you know, then you lose, you know, they made the trade with Whiteside to Portland. To me, getting rid of Whiteside is total addition by subtraction. And, you know, it just, you've seen him pout. It just has not worked, again, in kind of the modern-day NBA landscape to have that traditional center. It has kind of held this team down, if you will. So, again, Miami was banged up in a lot of ways. Last year, they have a much deeper roster, and I think you'll see a lot more together type of team. You know, we saw in training camp where we read these articles and Jimmy Butler showing up for training camp at 3 a.m. and then all of a sudden some of the other guys started showing up at 3 a.m. To me, that's a very positive sign. And and to make matters better for Miami getting there, we talk about just how bad this Eastern Conference team is. Yes, you have Milwaukee. Yes, you have Philadelphia, Boston, to a certain degree. But after that, there is just nothing out there. And you talk about these teams that are tanking, the Washingtons, the Charlottes. There's just a lot of wins to be had by some of these other teams. So I like this Miami team this year.
One of my favorite things about working at ESPN since the Supreme Court ruling is my ability to tap into the knowledge of so many advanced sports fans and try to like aggregate their knowledge and information and apply it to the gambling market that, I've been experienced with for a while, right? So a lot of people that I work with are like really knowledgeable about sports, but just don't understand like the numbers. I mean, sometimes I went to dinner the other night. Somebody's like, I don't know what minus 120 means, but they're like a savant with like certain things. And then some of them do know gambling because of pick 'em leagues or whatever, right? So I've talked to a lot of people who aren't associated with Daily Wager who know gambling and don't know gambling. And you hear, and then somebody was just like, that Miami Heat win total really feels low. And they brought up the division. They're like, first of all, the division stinks. So you get like more wins that way when it's the Hawks, Wizards, and Hornets. So the Hawks are good, obviously, the Hornets and Wizards are in a class by themselves. Then the Hawks are the next tier up. And then you have the Magic, which could be a lot of things went right last year. So the Heat could just like feast on not only the Eastern Conference, but their division. And to your point, the reports that you hear out of Miami are all things positive. My favorite story about Jimmy Butler is when he was in Chicago, he did not get cable for one summer because he didn't want to be distracted. So he always went to the gym. Now that's a couple contracts ago and that intense competitiveness could be a little faded, but this is a guy who's all in, and but you said their depth. I'm worried a little bit about his supporting cast. I agree that they're deep. Like, their second unit is pretty solid. But aside from Butler, like, where do you get points? Now, I'm enamored with Adebayo, and Hero's a nice, promising rookie. But there's just not a lot of offense there, and that concerns me.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember Dragic was extremely banged up last year. He didn't play in a lot of games, and I'm not exactly sure if he's going to start or come off the bench. I think he's probably going to come off the bench, yeah. And that's going to help their offense a lot with what they want to do, because I think Winslow is essentially the starting point guard at this point, and I understand that. Again, as we talked about, Dragic is always kind of banged up. He's 33 years old. And, like I said, I mean, I think he only played in 20, maybe the low 30s. Last year. So that takes a lot of it off him. And you have to remember, he's still a very dynamic offensive player. And he improves his supporting cast when he's out there. So I think him being in charge of the second team is really going to help this team. And guys like Tyler Hero and Derek Jones Jr., who still has plenty of talent, he can make amends. Myers Leonard, they got him in that trade with Portland. Obviously more of an offensive type of player with him. Kelly Olynyk is a guy that can score. Deion Waiters, when he's not complaining about maybe his role, he's a guy that can certainly put some baskets there. So I think this team offensively is going to be much, much better than they were last year. Remember, Miami last season with the injuries and attrition, from an offensive efficiency standpoint, they were 26th in the NBA. I think they are going to move up. I mean, this to me is going to be an above-average offensive basketball team.
I'm a little worried when you say guys like Olynyk and Deion Waiters, when you're mentioning like where the offense is going to come from. Those guys are – But again, we don't need them to win the East or to finish the top seed. We just need them.
Right, but like I say, to me that's the second team. They're going to be able to score with that second team against, the Charlottes, the Washington, when they don't even have a first team.
Yeah, fair. I also have a big bet on them to win the division, by the way, for those listening. Any other futures?
Well, what was the price on that, Doug?
I think it was like $1.30 maybe.
Yeah.
Obviously Orlando's the only competition.
Right.
For all the reasons we met. I feel like I really like Orlando's coach.
Mm-hmm, Clifford.
Yeah, but I think they are poised to have a little regression. I think everything went right last year, and they still limped into the playoffs. But it wasn't my favorite play, but it's up there.
What's your favorite play, Doug?
I'm hemming and hawing. I think it's the Rockets to win the Southwest Division. There was 285s out there, minus 285.
Okay.
I'm a big believer in the Rockets. I've done a bunch of, like, I did a podcast last week and I did a podcast on Monday on the NBA, so I'm trying to get your pick, your brain. But I was on the Jazz season win total over. The Rockets division, I really like. I mean, frankly, the Bucks division odds is free money if you can find that 550 at DraftKings. Westgate had minus 2,000 by comparison. So, if you can grab these rogue numbers, those are my favorite. Let me ask you this. I'm on the Grizzlies under, and I feel like all the metrics guys are on the over.
Yeah, it's just so hard to have a lot of confidence and with a team like Memphis, because the tanking is kind of on within that organization with that team, and it's just a total full-on rebuild. And you look at the talent that Memphis has, and when you consider that teams like Phoenix and Sacramento should be better, it's just not the very many wins for them to be had in the Western Conference. And you can look at them tonight as a 8.5-point underdog against Miami. But, Memphis has the 31-year-old GM now, Zach Kleiman, they brought in, the 34-year-old coach Taylor Jenkins with what they want to do. Just a total rebuild. And, from a talent perspective, they're just hoping the development of, obviously, Morant, what was the number one draft pick last year, Doug?
Well, it was Ja Morant, and then they have the Jaren Jackson Jr. from Spartan.
Yeah, Jaren Jackson. And, it's really centered around them. This is just such a totally different team than they've been in recent years. And they've tried to get as much out of the grit and grind style that they possibly could. And they kind of blew that up, obviously, going through last year. So this is a totally different team. Jenkins from the Budenholzer tree, if you will. They're going to shoot a ton of three-pointers. They're going to play with a lot of pace. Total opposite of where Memphis was with the grit and grind. And remember, Doug, when a team plays with more pace, like the Atlanta Hawks did last year, that means more possessions against the L.A. Clippers, more possessions against
the
Houston Rockets. That's not a good sign. And that means more losses.
They can take it. No, they're not.
Right. So I don't think much of this Memphis team. Hopefully, I think they're going to be fun to watch. But, if you're trying to make bets on them and for them to win, if you're counting on them to win games, I think you're up against it. I think you're on the right side there, Doug.
And I'll say this also. They might cover. A lot of these tanking teams, they may not win games, but they might lose by less. And that's fine for the point spread. But we have teams that finish in the teens in terms of wins. A lot, like a couple of them a year. And obviously that's going to be like the Hornets. But, even the Hornets under, I kind of like 23 or whatever it was. Like, this team is bad, man. I don't even know who their best player is. What is it, Batum? I don't know. Bridges?
Oh, for Charlotte? Yeah. Charlotte's really, really bad.
Right. But, I don't see 24 wins on their schedule.
No, and that's just it. And we've seen these teams in the second half not even try. And that's what you're going to have with a team like Memphis and Charlotte. So to try to play those teams over the total, that just to me is a very uphill battle.
Yeah. All right, my man. Really appreciate any futures, any for a parting gift?
Just really those season over-under wins. I don't do a whole heck of a lot with the futures market in the NBA. I think I predicted the finals. I thought it was going to be the Clippers versus the Sixers. So you're talking about those teams. Maybe there's a hint of value if you want to bet the Sixers to win the NBA title. But, you can wait. Like I always say, Doug, you could have had the Toronto Raptors at over 10-1 when the playoffs started last year. So you have all year to kind of figure things out. I tell you what, we had opening night last night, and if that's the trend or what we're going to see of this NBA season, boy, we have a lot to look forward to. It's going to be a great season. I look forward to coming on and talking some more NBA with you at various points of the season here.
Yeah, already a bad beat, an outright dog winning out. A lot of fun already out of the gates. But
yeah, I should say that. I had the Pelicans plus 7. I had that game under the total. And crazy.
You want to hear something even almost equally as bad beat?
I had
Pelicans first to 10 points and also first to 20.
What happened on that?
You think you're good leading 17-6. You think you're good.
Okay.
And then the Raptors go on a 14-2 run. So I got the first to 10 points, but not the first to 20. And, we know that, the ring ceremony hangover. Usually like to do first quarter and then first to 10, first to 20. So I only did first to 10, first to 20, and went 1-1, got plus money. But still, I mean, losing the first to 20 when you're up 17-6 is a tough one. Almost as bad as plus 7 loss last night.
Yeah, that was a tough way to start.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's plenty of other opportunities moving forward, but we appreciate it, man. ER, really appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate having me coming on. Have a good one. Good luck to everyone. Thank you.
All right.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Special thanks to Bob Lee, as always. I don't want to forget that. Take it for granted. The general.
Does he get paid like royalties for everyone, or is it like a one-time deal?
He was very gracious because he is one of the coolest guys ever to do this. And I saw him actually at a ESPN like reunion event. Now it's for people who back in the day, and Bob's obviously got a circle of people, but I poked my head in because I know the guy running it. I used to work with him at NBA Tonight. And so saw Bob and I reminded him and thanked him. He laughed. He's like, oh, of course. So a good handshake, a hearty handshake. No.
A couple winners.
Yeah, I give him some second half lines in women's. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, thanks to ER, thanks to Murray. Just want to remind everyone, we have a brand new podcast out. You got to check it out. ESPN Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes, Monday through Friday. She takes a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes. Listen and subscribe now to ESPN Daily, wherever you find your podcasts. And Mina's been on this podcast before around the Super Bowl. Really cool, really interesting person. Got a great sort of perspective on sports, and obviously very highly educated individual as well, and entertaining. So love Mina. And so go check out that pod. And here's the thing. We're going to have the Thursday pod tomorrow as well with Mr. Director. He's traveling, so we're going to explain it all. But looking forward to that as well. We got Baby Bankroll Bonanza tomorrow for the NFL pod. So this was a little lengthy. We got some NBA talk, college football talk. We're going to do a lot of NBA talk throughout the course of the season just because I am a passionate viewer of the association and consumer of the association. All right. Thanks to everyone.